Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Economics Report and American Mosaic, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, let's do it again. It's time to improve your American English skills and learn about important events at the same time. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Today, we will talk about Africa. Experts think the population on the continent will grow by a huge amount within the next 30 years. We will give you complete details. Then, a good news, bad news story from the United Nations regarding climate change. Let's get started with part one. Officials with the United Nations Children's Fund, or UNICEF, are predicting a large increase in the number of births in Africa. The officials say that by the year 2050, 4 out of 10 people on Earth will be African. They add that between now and then, about 1.8 billion African babies will be born. Jonathan Evans reports.
Africa is already home to one of the world's youngest populations. The African Union says about two-thirds of the continent's 1.1 billion people are less than 35 years old. Many of these young people will reach reproductive age in the next 30 years. A baby boom could change the continent greatly, stretching resources and changing family life. Princewell Elimiaga owns a children's school in Johannesburg, the largest city in South Africa. He says he doesn't need to read the reports to know that the population is growing. His classrooms are filled to capacity with children. One 23-year-old teacher at the school says watching the population explode has changed her own reproductive plans. She says she plans to have no more than 2 babies. One researcher at a university in South Africa says that population growth is a serious public policy issue. He adds that every African leader needs to be thinking about the future now. In 2010, the International Labor Organization found that 41 of 50 African nations studied provide at least 12 weeks of work leave for new mothers. Those figures have been increasing. The organization also found that most African nations give new fathers less than 10 days of leave. Many give none at all. Some countries are having a hard time enforcing the laws they already have. Esther Njau is a mother living in Ngong. She says employers refuse to give new mothers the 3 months of leave required by Kenyan law. Ms. Njau says she got just 2 months of leave at her private company. Many of her friends who had babies were dismissed from their jobs. She says that the possibility of losing one's job can stop a person from having more babies. Many women in South Africa say government-subsidized motherhood is their only means of survival. 25-year-old Simpiwe Gwebu is one of those women. She had her first baby 2 years ago. The government gave her about $30 a month in assistance. She says that amount was not enough, so she decided to have another child. She says the government gives more money with each baby. Critics of the government program say it sends the wrong message. They say the government should instead work to improve economic possibilities for the workforce. West Africa has among the highest birth rates on the continent. The average woman in Niger has about 7 children. birth control methods are seen as a threat to culture, religion, and tradition. Senegal is a predominantly Muslim country. The Ministry of Health teamed with religious leaders to help spread information about the importance of family planning. One Senegalese expert says the use of pregnancy prevention in the country increased to 16% among married women in 2013. That was an increase of 4% in the 2 years since the family planning effort began. In addition, infant deaths in Senegal dropped to about 2%. Dr. Ashley Mtunzi is an expert in maternal health at Wits University in Johannesburg. He says South Africa loses 41 babies for every 1,000 live births. He notes that the lack of prenatal care feeds into the nation's AIDS problem. He says untreated HIV-positive mothers can pass the virus on to their babies. Experts say there is reason to feel hopeful about Africa's future. An expert with UNICEF in Senegal says that Africa's booming population could be a great hope for the continent. I'm Jonathan Evans.
You are listening to the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. In 2014, the year just passed, the United Nations released a series of climate reports that showed temperatures on Earth are rising. That is the bad news. The good news is that countries are working together to fight climate change. Christopher Cruz looks back over the past 12 months.
Experts say a 2-degree rise in temperature above pre-industrial times will cause serious damage that cannot be reversed. The pre-industrial period ended in the middle of the 18th century. That was followed by the Industrial Revolution, when machines and new manufacturing processes were created. Michael Oppenheimer is a professor of geosciences and international affairs at Princeton University in New Jersey. He says air pollution emissions must be reduced before temperatures rise.
That makes it incumbent upon governments to get moving quickly, which is why there's so much focus on the meeting in Lima and the meeting a year from now that's planned for Paris.
The recent United Nations talks in Peru were designed to prepare officials for a meeting in Paris, France, later this year. Many nations will sign a global climate agreement at that meeting. The agreement reached in Peru is different from earlier agreements. Developing countries like China and India are promising to join richer countries in reducing emissions. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said developing nations are having a large effect on the environment.
More than half of global emissions, more than half, are coming from developing nations. So it is imperative that they act too.
China and the United States acted. They signed an agreement. American officials said the U.S. would reduce emissions between 26 and 28% by 2025. China said it would begin reducing emissions in 2030. Michael Oppenheimer says other countries will release their environmental plans early this year. He says negotiators continue to discuss details of the agreement before the conference opens in Paris. But he says he hopes people understand that an agreement is just the beginning of efforts to reduce global warming.
No matter what comes out of Paris, it's important that this problem be revisited continually to make sure that countries are living up to their commitments. And that means active and engaged citizenries in all these countries have to push on their governments.
Professor Oppenheimer says if countries do not take action, the planet will become warmer faster than at any time in the history of civilization. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. This is VOA, the Voice of America.
The Economics Report is next, followed by American Mosaic. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. European officials are urging Greece to continue with economic reforms as the country prepares for early elections. The vote was called for this week after Greek lawmakers failed to elect a new president. Some Greek citizens say they are not looking forward to the elections. Susanna Steiner is one of them. She says the vote should not be happening now. It is the worst time for the economy and for security, she says, and everyone is unhappy. Dakis Voutsis is a businessman. He agrees with Susanna Steiner. He says the government should have been left to do its work. But he says now that early elections are set for January 25th, Greeks will have to decide whom to vote for. On Monday, Parliament failed for the third time to elect a president. The failure forced Prime Minister Antonis Samaras to call for general elections. His New Democracy Party controls what has been the ruling coalition in Greece. But the Syriza party is more popular in opinion studies. Syriza says that if it wins control of parliament, austerity will be history. For years, the government has cut spending in an effort to solve a major debt crisis. Alexis Tsipras is the leader of Syriza. He says the new election will be the beginning of the end for the current leadership. He says the government sank Greece into poverty and worsened unemployment. The Syriza party says it wants to renegotiate two economic rescue plans worth nearly $300 billion. The financial aid came from the European Commission, the European Central Bank, and the International Monetary Fund. They made the aid dependent on Greece enacting strong measures aimed at ending its financial problems. Opponents, however, say the spending cuts and tax increases have harmed the country. Greece now has an unemployment rate of more than 25%. The economic crisis in Eurozone countries was at its height in 2010 and 2011. At that time, many observers feared that economic unrest in Greece might lead to its withdrawal from the European Union. They feared it could eventually lead to the single monetary union breaking up. But today, observers say the fears are not so extreme. Dimitris Sotiropoulos teaches political science at the University of Athens. He thinks Syriza would negotiate with international lenders and would not risk losing Greece's place within the Eurozone if it won the election. And that's the Economics Report from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter.
Welcome to American Mosaic from VOA Learning English. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on the program, Marcia James tells us about the growing number of international students in the United States. Also, Jonathan Evans reports with a personal touch about a recent musical performance in Washington, D.C. But first, we hear from Jerry Watson about an independent movie that tells the story of a Somali pirate.
Hollywood directors often make films about people who get persuaded to take part in a crime because they need money. There is a new look to this old story in a film called Fishing Without Nets. This time, the central character is a Somali fisherman who cannot support his family. And the crime is piracy, attacking ships on the high seas. In Fishing Without Nets, a fisherman named Abdi cannot earn enough because pollution has killed off much of the catch he needs to feed his family. Then, a friend talks to him about helping a group of pirates. The pirates capture a French oil ship and take the international crew hostage. They hope to get a huge payment when they free the crew.
I'm a fisherman.
No, you're not a fisherman. You're a pirate.
Cutter Hodierne directed the film. It is his first full-length movie. News about Somali piracy in the Indian Ocean had caught his interest. He was especially fascinated by the subject from the viewpoint of the gunman.
And I just was so intrigued by what would lead somebody to get to that point of doing something so desperate and also so kind of audacious.
In 2010, at age 24, Cutter Hodierne went to Kenya and made a shorter version of Fishing Without Nets. He used Somali refugees to play the parts. These untrained actors included day laborers, fishermen, and truck drivers. They were all living in Mombasa, Kenya, at the time.
So we would set up these informal auditions in restaurants and just like hangouts where Somalis would sit around and chew cot and drink tea, and we would audition people there.
The short film won a Sundance Festival Grand Jury Prize. At that point, Vice Media provided $2 million to finance a feature-length version of the film. It was filmed again in Mombasa with many of the same Somali non-actors. Again, they invented their own speeches. Mr. Hodierne used a translator, a language expert, to tell them only basic facts about what should happen in each scene.
So they knew what was going to happen within a scene, and then they would improvise all of the dialogue within that scene so that it was in their voice. And they are amazing at that. They add so much to it that I couldn't have written on a page. And so I considered them sort of co-writers of the movie.
Mr. Hodierne likes to describe Fishing Without Nets as an action film for theaters that show artistic films. He says the unlikely combination of suspense and reflectiveness works well. I'm Jerry Watson.
Almost 900,000 international students are studying in American colleges and universities today. Nearly half of this record number of foreign students are from Asia, mainly China. They are among people from other countries who now make up about 4% of all university students in the U.S. America has more of the world's 4.5 million international students than any other country. A new report says more than 886,000 foreign students registered at U.S. universities during the school year 2013-2014. That is an increase of 8% over the year before. The Institute of International Education and the State Department made the report. The study also demonstrates trends over the past 15 years. It shows that since 2000, the number of international students in the U.S. has grown by 72%. Students from China in undergraduate programs are mainly responsible for this trend. Eric Xu, a Chinese student at Columbia University, says studying in the U.S. is a valuable experience.
In the U.S., they emphasize on class discussion and emphasize on your opinion. You can actually debate with others and with your professor or teacher. And it's another atmosphere I want to experience.
While attendance by Chinese students rose by almost 17% over the past year, other countries also saw a major increase. Kuwait's college student population rose by 42%, and that of Brazil by 22%. Other countries with more international students than earlier are Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Venezuela. The report says the Middle East and North African area was the fastest growing in international student population. It showed an increase of 20% in students registered at colleges and universities. In Latin America and the Caribbean, there was an 8% increase. Rajika Bhandari is a writer of the report and Deputy Vice President of Research and Evaluation at the Institute of International Education. She says the presence of foreign students in American schools helps the U.S. She also says about 4,000 American colleges and universities can serve more overseas students.
We know that international students contribute significantly to U.S. classrooms and campuses through their global perspectives and by providing international exposure to those American students who may never have the opportunity to study overseas.
Evan Ryan, Assistant Secretary of State for Education, says enrollment of students from abroad also adds to the U.S. economy.
This year, $27 billion was contributed to our economy at the local, state, and national levels through payments for tuition, housing, and other costs.
The U.S. State Department and the Department of Education also encourage study in other countries by American students.
We believe that study abroad can increase American competitiveness by enabling U.S. students to acquire language skills as well as the regional and global perspectives necessary to succeed in the 21st century.
About 290,000 U.S. students went to study abroad in 2012-2013 for educational credit. Europe, especially Britain, remains the number one nation for study by Americans. But the latest report shows an increase in the number of students who now choose to go to China and other nations. While American schools continue to welcome young people from all over the world, student exchanges among other countries also are on the rise. I'm Marcia James.
New Orleans is a city famous for its food, mix of cultural influences, and of course, its music. The city known as the Big Easy is the birthplace of several styles of popular American music, including jazz and ragtime. New Orleans has a long history of combining musical art forms to create something different and fun. the band Bonorama is both. The New Orleans-based group brings together funk, rock, blues, and jazz, creating a gumbo for the ears. Bonorama has horns like many local bands. But unlike most groups, the trombone players lead this band. Craig Klein and Mark Mullins are the founders of Bonorama and two of its three trombone players. Both Mr. Klein and Mr. Mullins performed as part of the brass section for another New Orleans musician, Harry Connick Jr.
I don't much care if I am the last in
Craig Klein says he was inspired to start the band that would become Bonorama while traveling and playing music for Harry Connick Jr.
Mark and I were on tour with Harry Connick Jr. We started playing with him in 1990. And we were in New York, and I went and saw this Cuban band had five trombones, and I just had an idea. Let's make a New Orleans band that features the trombone.
The group formed in 1998. Mark Mullins says he knew from the start that the sound of Bonorama was different.
The sound of the unit from the very beginning was obvious that it connected with people for some reason. And I think people heard a sound when bringing these instruments together that they hadn't really heard before. In New Orleans, you hear a lot of different things. I mean, you'll hear funk bands and rock bands and, of course, brass bands. But a band of all trombones with the sousaphone and the conventional, like, funk band rhythm section was kind of different.
One special quality is that Mark Mullins sometimes makes his trombone sound like an electric guitar. He creates this effect using a guitar pedal that he connects to a microphone on his trombone. He can lift the pedal up and down to make different kinds of sounds, just like a guitar player. He says audiences enjoy hearing guitar sounds coming from a trombone. He adds that he is able to express musical ideas with the guitar pedal that may not be possible with trombone alone.
It's definitely fun to, it's like driving a different car, you know, speaking a little different language for a second there, because you can say things that you might not get away with saying quite as well. It gives you a different vocabulary for a minute. It's neat. But the rock stuff is fun. It transfers real well, and I think if you pick the right songs and just have fun with it, be honest with it, I think people kind of connect with that. They know if you're having fun. They know if it's kind of honest. And the sound of here, for the audience perspective, apparently it seems like they get a kick out of hearing Hendrix or Led Zeppelin through the voice of sousaphone and trombones. And it's fun for everybody.
Bonorama's latest album is called Shake It, Baby. It is the band's sixth album. But Craig Klein says the horn section has recorded music for at least 10 other musicians or groups, including R.E.M. and OK Go.
We're on R.E.M.'s record. We're on the Sierra Leone record. We did a record with some of the OK Go guys. Cowboy Mouth. Radiators. Wonderlick. Mark Stone. I guess we've probably been, as a horn section, probably about 10 different records or more.
Bonorama recently performed at the Hamilton in Washington, D.C. This reporter got to not only attend the performance, but to take the stage and play trombone with the band.